That was a little music of Shakespeare's time to start our second hour of Morning Blend. I'm your host, Story Nutt, welcoming you listeners and also welcoming two actors from the American Shakespeare Theater in Stanton, Virginia, Andrew Tung and Chris Bellinger. Welcome to Huntsville.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So glad to have you here. Andrew and Chris are here as part of the Huntsville Literary Association's annual presentation of theater from this illustrious organization, the American Shakespeare Center, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But first, let's talk about the plays you'll be performing here in Huntsville tonight and tomorrow night. Shakespeare, right here in Huntsville, Alabama, taking place at Mae Jemison High School on Pulaski Pike. Both plays start at 7 o'clock, and tickets are available online at the Huntsville Literary Association website and at the door. I just wanted to get that info in there, and we'll repeat it a few times so everybody will know what's going on. Okay, so first, tonight we have one of Shakespeare's most popular and well-loved plays, A Midsummer Night's Dream. For those of us who have never seen it, what's it about? What can we expect?
Well, Midsummer Night's Dream is actually three different overlapping storylines that all converge in the woods outside of mythical era Athens, back when gods and heroes were still out there amongst all of the plebeians. You have the world of four lovers who are all not necessarily paired up with who they're supposed to end up with at the top of the show. Then you have the world of the fairies that inhabit the woods outside of the city and outside of human civilization. Mm-hmm. And then you also have what are known as the Mechanicals, a group of hardworking Athenians who are trying to put on a play for the Duke of Athens's wedding that happens at the end of the play. And not everyone is quite set up for success at the top of the show, and everyone ends up running into each other and over each other throughout those woods for a good part of the play. Lots of hilarity ensues.
Lots of action in this play.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So even maybe not real young children, but students particularly would enjoy this. And there's enough action to keep everyone interested.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Chris, you play the role of Oberon, King of the Fairies. Is this a dream role for you?
I think Oberon's a dream role for just about everybody.
It's
one of those roles that everybody wants to play. It's a lot of fun. It's one of those roles. And I think just the fairies in general. I was talking to one of our other cast members the other day about this. And the fun thing, actually it might have been you. The fun thing about Oberon and about Titania and the other fairies is that the language for them is so much fun to revel in. And because they are otherworldly creatures, you can really lean into that language a lot more than, say, the lovers, who really have to be, I mean, for that comedy to work, it has to be as straightforward as possible. And Oberon can kind of chew the scenery, and so can Puck and Titania. Like the main three fairies get to kind of chew the scenery and really enjoy the words that are coming out of their mouth, and that makes a lot of fun.
I'll bet it does. Well, Andrew, you play Lysander, one of the romantic leads, but you also cover another role in this play. Is that practice a holdover from Shakespeare's time, or is this covering two roles? I mean, obviously they're not on stage simultaneously, but is this just a convenience for a traveling troupe that doesn't need to bring too many people along?
Well, I would say yes to both answers, because even in Shakespearean times in Elizabethan England, tours of actors, whether they were in one theater and performing there or if they were on the road, there wouldn't be that many performers. You might have only between 10 and 15 people performing in the troupe. But if you have, say, one of Shakespeare's history plays, you have dozens upon dozens of characters.
Right.
So you might not necessarily have, you know, your title character playing eight different roles, but a lot of the other actors will be doing that. They would have been doing that, and they today will be doing that if you are trying to keep a company down to a more manageable size like ours is. We only have 11 actors on the road with us at any given time, so there's a lot of doubling.
Okay. Well, we'll look for you a couple of different times in the play tonight. Well, Andrew, your character of Lysander finds true love is not an easy road. Would you be so kind as to give us that famous quote from this play that everybody's at least heard the end of?
For aught that I could ever read, could ever hear by tale or history, the course of true love never did run smooth.
There you go. There you have it. Yeah, that's you know, we all need to remember this, that the course of true love never runs smooth. Well, while we're talking about this play, let's talk a little about the setting. Folks might be expecting to see a woodsy backdrop with fairies running around, but I understand that the director has chosen to set this play someplace that's pretty familiar to us here in the South. Tell us about it.
We've brought the play a bit forward in time and made it a little bit more central to America. So the setting is roughly in the 1930s South, sort of inside and around a major city like New Orleans.
Okay.
So you have, instead of fairies being, you know, these little sprightly creatures dancing around, you'll have, slightly more earthy characters with slightly more familiar characteristics to themselves. The dress that all of the human characters will be much more modernized. You'll be able to recognize those from maybe some of your grandparents' photographs from earlier in the 20th century. So it's not necessarily to try and make it more accessible, but try and show that this play, it's not just, doesn't only work if you are looking at it from, you know, an ancient
mythological, yeah.
That there are many other modern mythologies that this can fit into as well.
And yet you haven't changed the words at all. The words are all still Shakespeare's words.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just the costumes and the scenery that's changed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if listeners are like me and they didn't really study Shakespeare in school, I mean, will we be able to understand everything that's going on? I know that this play is in English, but it's Shakespearean English, which sounds daunting. Can we understand?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that looking on a page at the language that Shakespeare used, first of all, is much harder than actually hearing it.
Okay.
Shakespeare didn't necessarily write grammatically. He wrote kind of concepts and ideas, so he's writing more rhetorically. But when you hear it, you know, if it's delivered well, it's really perfectly understandable. And there are some with, like, Measure for Measure and a few others that do kind of get a little dense, but especially Midsummer and Imogen are going to be pretty easy to understand. The text isn't very dense.
Mm-hmm.
It's really perfectly understandable. And Midsummer is also, you've heard so many of these lines before.
They'll seem familiar.
Really,
yeah.
There are a few lines in Midsummer that don't get quoted ad nauseum everywhere you
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
It's really, they'll all be familiar.
Maybe because it's timeless. Well, I have my ticket and I'm bringing a friend along to see the play and we're so excited. And we're hoping to get there by 6 o'clock because there's a pre-show lecture. We can get a little more insight. I think one of the local thespians is giving this talk on the play and on Shakespeare before it begins. So we'll be able to get a little more of an idea what's going on. I don't think you have to do that. In fact, I may run late and not get there, but they're program notes and it will be easily understandable, I'm sure. Well, let's take just a moment to listen to some more music from Shakespeare's time. This is the Cobbler's Hornpipe from the third act of Midsummer Night's Dream, performed by Ensemble Galilei.
Thank you.
We've been listening to incidental music from Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream, performed by Ensemble Galilee. If you're just tuning in, I'm joined in the studio today by Chris Bellinger and Andrew Tung, two actors from the American Shakespeare Center, which is based in Stanton, Virginia. They're here in Huntsville to present two of Shakespeare's plays over the next two nights, A Midsummer Night's Dream and Imogen, formerly known as Cymbeline. That's going to be tomorrow night. And guys, first of all, why has this play been retitled? It was known in Shakespeare's time as King Cymbeline, and now it's called Imogen, or at least that's how you're billing it?
Yes. So, you know, there's a habit in early modern English, right, to name plays after the kings, which feature heavily in them.
Okay.
And so Cymbeline is the king in Cymbeline. I don't know that anywhere in the history of the play do people really focus on Cymbeline. The character Imogen really is kind of the character that everybody focuses on from that story. So
okay.
So renaming it as Imogen kind of calls attention to that. And certainly this particular cut really focuses on Imogen's story in particular. Mm-hmm. So that refocusing is part of it, and also, like I said, just a recognition of, in general, Imogen and not Cymbeline, and then the texture of the two brothers, mm-hmm. And Posthumus. Those kind of three stories are really far more the focus of the play than Cymbeline,
right?
Comes on at the beginning and comes on at the end, and you really
nowhere
don't see
in between.
Him much in between. And so there are all these other characters that are really the focus of the story, and the story that we are choosing to focus on in telling this. As we mentioned with Midsummer, frequently there are many different plots weaving right. through Shakespeare's plays.
Yeah.
And so the idea was to really focus in on Imogen's story.
Mm-hmm. Well, this play is not a lighthearted comedy. It involves international relations, decapitations,
yeah.
maybe it sounds like
fun
borders
stuff.
Borders at least at on attempts at incestuous behavior. I don't know. Can you? And you're looking at me like, no, what is that? But I guess it's a stepbrother or something like that.
That relationship is luckily by marriage.
Oh, okay.
Only. So there would be no, I don't know, mixing of blood.
Yeah.
But okay, good. I'm relieved.
Yeah, it's the son of the queen from a previous marriage is seeking the hand of the daughter of the king of a previous marriage.
Okay. So wipe that out. Just stick yeah. with the decapitations and the international relations.
Oh, yeah, the lighthearted things. Yeah.
Well, is there any way to give a quick sketch of the plot as it goes through? Kind of an overview?
So Cymbeline at one point had two sons who are, before the play begins, have been kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what has happened to them. And he has currently only one child left, Imogen, who has married Posthumus, who has really no claim to any sort of nobility or royal blood. It's really kind of a bad match for the heir of a kingdom to make.
Okay.
And Cymbeline is justifiably kind of angry about this, and in response he banishes Posthumus. And Posthumus goes to Rome. At this time, Cymbeline and the Romans are kind of trying to negotiate tribute. And Imogen, being pursued by Cloten, her stepbrother, and trying to deal with the loss of Posthumus, and a lot of other things are going on. She makes the, and people are trying to kill her. She makes the decision to flee. Cloten follows her. I won't say what happens there, but it does involve the decapitation. And she also, Imogen, meets up with three guys living in a cave and pretends to be a boy, as frequently happens in Shakespeare, and kind of moves in with them and kind of hangs out.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Posthumus is running around Rome, banished. He believes that Imogen has been untrue to him because Iachimo, one of the villains of the play, has convinced him that he slept with Imogen. Mm-hmm. And Posthumus actually tries to have Imogen killed at that point. And he is deeply remorseful over this, but believes it has happened. So when tribute talks fall through and both sides go to war, all of these characters in Rome and in Britain are kind of thrown into the mix in this battle. And the resolution of this battle, which everything kind of becomes clear, the sons, Imogen, turns out the people that Imogen has been living with are actually the kidnapped sons of Cymbeline. That all comes out. Posthumus and Imogen are reunited. Iachimo kind of gets his comeuppance. The other villains are dealt with. We'll leave that to find out what happens. But everything kind of gets tied up neatly, more or less, in a bow at the end of that scene.
Amazing. That is so convoluted. And yet I'm sitting here thinking, this sounds like the plot of a show that could be on Netflix, you know, a new series on Netflix. This would fit right in because there's so much intrigue and misinformation. And
I think it's important to realize that, you know, Shakespeare, theater was the only entertainment that people had of this kind of telling stories. Uh-huh. Right? You could go watch bear baiting. But so in a lot of ways, while we now think of this as high literature, it was soap operas. Mm-hmm. And it was like watching a Netflix show. And the histories are like watching House of Cards. And the comedies are... And it can get convoluted and it can get messy, and
But we managed to follow all of those, and I'm sure we could follow this as well. Right,
exactly.
Right. Well, Andrew, you play one of Imogen's kidnapped brothers who you kind of help save the day for Britain in the end. And Chris, you play Imogen's husband, Posthumus. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite passage from your character that you could give us, just a little snippet?
Sure. At the point that Iachimo is trying to convince Posthumus that if he wanted to, he could sleep with Imogen and take the ring that Posthumus wears from
her. A ring. Okay.
There's a ring. And Posthumus is really cocky at this point, and he is Iachimo is a Roman / Italian. And he has this great line, and his Pashmi is really, I don't know if there's any other word for it, but he gets really catty in this scene. And, you know, he says, your Italy contains none so accomplished a thief to threaten the honor of my wife. And then he says, I do nothing doubt you have your store of thieves. Like, obviously, Italy's just full of dishonest and disreputable people. And then he says, you know, notwithstanding, I fear not my ring. And it's just so nasty and so pointed at Iachimo. And
do you just revel in playing that and saying that?
It's really fun. And it's really fun. And it's really fun to lean into that, because obviously he's going to be convinced later on that what Iachimo was saying he can do did indeed happen. And so... you know, the more sure he is of himself in this moment, the more devastating that loss is when he finds that his wife has been unfaithful to him.
Oh, well, just fantastic. I can't wait to see this. Well, let's bask in the glow of this story and hear a little more music. We'll be back in a couple of minutes to talk more with these wonderful Shakespearean actors, Chris Bellinger and Andrew Tung. Thank you. incidental music from Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. We've been listening to Ensemble Galilei. Hi there, in case you've just joined us. This is Morning Blend. I'm your host, Dory Nutt, and I'm joined here this morning by two actors from the American Shakespeare Center, Andrew Tung and Chris Bellinger. Let's talk a little about your organization, the American Shakespeare Center. It's in Stanton, Virginia. It presents theater there, and it also sends traveling troops out to spread the gospel of Shakespeare. Tell us about your lives in what I would think is an actor's dream job.
It's pretty amazing. It's combining a lot of different elements that an actor would look for. First of all, the traveling aspect. There are plenty of tours in the country because, like you said, it is kind of the actor's dream to be able to take a show that you've worked on and bring it to the masses to spread the joy of what you've been working on, but also because there are so many different audiences and different communities. No matter how wide or how narrow your traveling route is, you'll get to meet so many different people. You'll get to see so many different reactions to the same plays that you're doing. And then also just to have the amount of time that a longer tour like ours gives you to really delve into those characters, to really examine them and to pull all of the humanity out of them that you can find. It's a gift that you don't get many other opportunities with.
Oh, well, I bet it's just wonderful. Did you always dream of performing Shakespeare? What about you, Chris?
I mean, certainly since I was a teenager. We were talking about this. So I'm actually going to jump into it. The first live Shakespeare I ever saw was this company in 1996. I was 15. I hadn't turned 16 yet, and they were doing a production of Julius Caesar. A man named John Harrell, who still acts at the theater, was playing Cassius. And then exactly 20 years later was my first contract with the ASC, playing Caesar in Julius Caesar. So that was a kind of a fun...
A full circle, yeah.
So I mean, certainly from... I thought I wanted to be an actor before that moment, but then I saw this company and I went, I want to do that. That is what I want to do. Yeah.
Well, so for people listening today, for yourselves, or maybe if you know some students that are in school right now and can't be listening, but you want to take them to this play tonight or tomorrow night at Mae Jemison High School, put on by the American Shakespeare Center, you might be sparking a career here or one for yourself, you know, or just come find the love of this live theater that so many people enjoy. And the traveling troops are great. I've seen you guys here several times in Huntsville. You come every year courtesy of the Huntsville Literary Association. And I've actually been to a production there in Stanton. I saw The Winter's Tale there with my family a few years ago at this theater that was built by the American Shakespeare Center. It's kind of patterned after Shakespeare's Globe Theater. I believe I sat on a bench. Do they have chairs? That's my memory of it.
Yep, they have most of the building. Well, actually, almost the entire interior of it is made of wood of Virginia white oak, I believe. And it's patterned not actually after Shakespeare's Globe, but because the Globe was his outdoor theater. It's patterned after his indoor theater, the Blackfriars, which we've also named ours, the Blackfriars.
I remember that now. But I knew it was from that time, patterned after that time. And it's not a large theater. The seats are all very close. The production I went to, they had some audience members sitting on the stage of the production. You're right there in the middle of it. It's all very intimate. And, you know, if you're like me, you're older and your hearing is not good, sometimes I can't understand what they're saying in movies. Just a little technical point here. Usually when I have people come in to do interviews, I instruct them to sit about a fist length away from the microphone so that we can pick them up. And you guys are far back, and yet your voices are just projecting through. I've got great coverage of your voices. You really know how to make everything come out clear. Even you don't use amplification in your productions, correct?
No, we aim for covering as many early modern and Shakespearean performing elements as we can manage, both at the Blackfriars Theater in Stanton, Virginia, and also on the road wherever we go. So that means that we have no amplification, we have no electronic sources for sounds or music. So any music that we play, we all play ourselves and is acoustic in nature.
Yeah.
We do not differentiate between sort of the modern stage lighting and the audience lighting. Everyone for the entire play will be in the same pool of lights that everybody can see each other.
Oh.
And we definitely still keep those seats up on stage for people to sit up there with us.
Right, right. And I seem to remember in the ones I've seen here, there's not a whole lot of props or set pieces. The focus is all on the words and the action. We're not watching a whole lot of stuff flying in and out.
Yeah, no, and that is what it would have been. There were not, at that point in time, people didn't focus on big set changes. Theaters didn't have big set changes. They didn't have a lot of props. There weren't a lot of set pieces. What would have been extravagant in any production would have been the costumes. Most of a theater's wealth was contained in its costumes. It's one of the reasons why theater fires were so devastating.
Oh.
There was not only the loss of the building, but costumes obviously go up in flames very easily. So, you know, if your theater did catch on fire, you grabbed as many costumes as you could on your way out the door.
Yeah. Oh.
And so obviously we will be, and we talked a little before the costuming for Midsummer earlier. You know, those are, the costuming is something that we focus on, and those elements. I love the Oberon costume actually has a lot of layers to it that people probably, you know, not everybody will notice every little thing in every little costume, but the costumes are definitely the most thought out production element in the shows.
Well, those of us listening to this interview today that are at the show tonight will be looking at every aspect of your costumes, each of the different ones you wear. Let me get a bit of information about the productions in right here. A Midsummer Night's Dream and Imogen, and you'll be performing here in Huntsville. Both plays take place in the theater at Mae Jemison High School, which is on Pulaski Pike right here in Huntsville. It's easy to get to. It's a relatively new school with a beautiful building. There's lots of free parking and easy access to get inside, and there are free pre-show lectures starting at 6 p.m. before each production. So you can go and hear a little bit about, you know, if you want to get some insight into the productions before you see it. Local thespians will be giving those, local professors. But you can see A Midsummer Night's Dream tonight. And tomorrow night you can see Imogen, formerly known as Cymbeline, for you Shakespeare enthusiasts out there. Both shows start at 7, and lots of information is on the Huntsville Literary Association website. They're the sponsoring organization that brings us this great theater every year, so thank you, HLA. You can check out their website for ticket information for the Shakespeare plays and to find out about membership and other programs of the Huntsville Literary Association. So, let's see. Chris, you told us about the first Shakespeare play you saw and how the effect it had on you. Andrew, do you remember the first production of Shakespeare that you saw and how it affected you?
I do. It was quite a while ago, back when I was in eighth grade. As part of the English curriculum, my class was, of course, reading Romeo and Juliet.
Like we do, yes.
That comedic love story that even seemed like the teacher was surprised that everyone died at the end. Sorry, spoilers, everyone. But I was finding that I was having a very difficult time sort of following the text on the page. And eighth grade reading level does not necessarily equal Shakespearean language, even if a lot of the words are the same.
Right.
But we also had the chance to, after we read through the entire play, to go see a production also of touring actors that performed at the Rochester Opera House in Rochester, New Hampshire, near where I grew up. And just the experience of seeing what I had just read happen in front of me by people who were bringing so much life and love and humor to what I thought were just dry words on a page, it was really transformative for my understanding of exactly what it is that, you know, theater is. I was coming from a fairly rural area. We didn't have much theater actually happening at the time in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So to see people bringing these plays to life in such a way was really remarkable for me. Made me really realize, oh, maybe this would be something to do as a hobby and then later on as a profession.
Right, right. You really found your passion with this. Well, Chris Bellinger and Andrew Tung, I want to thank you both so much for stopping by today to make us feel a little more erudite and break a leg tonight. Can't wait to see the play and happy touring on your way to your next stop with the American Shakespeare Center. We'll go out with music that might have been heard by Shakespeare himself. Here is Pastime with Good Company, which is so fitting for the conversation we've just had. Bye, you guys.